Hello and welcome to Emissaries of Profits, a production of Androids and Assets. I'm Marshall.
And I'm Steven.
This is the show where we discuss the political economy of Bajoran space in the Alpha Quadrant, and particularly on Deep Space Nine, the Star Trek show. So political economy, that's the distribution of power, the way decisions are made, and who profits and who doesn't from the way society is run. Today we're talking about the 14th episode, Progress. The original air date was the 9th of May in 1993. Steven, why don't you give us a quick summary of the show?
Okay, so we find out that to heat 100,000 homes, never use numbers, Star Trek writers, don't do this. To heat 100,000 homes, the government of Bajor is going to some like copper wire down there, so the rotation of the molten core will generate an electric current that I guess they can power beam down to aforementioned 100,000 homes. This will make this very habitable moon that people are living on uninhabitable. So Kira's job is to evacuate everyone. So Kira goes down to Gerudo, and she shows up there, and she's threatened by farm implements.
No! Dun, dun,
And then she meets Melibok, the charismatic, if not somewhat pervy, leader of this group of, you know, hexa or septuagenarian people who live on the planet, who themselves have came to the moon fleeing the Cardassians and kind of became like live on the land, doomsday prepper farmer people out in the woods. And Kira's like, you gotta leave. And Melibok's like, hell no. Of course, the other two are silent because silent extras, I mean, they're silent because they're mute, because of Cardassian torture, and not because the show didn't have budget. Yeah, so one thing leads to another, things escalate, Kira gets mad, but Kira eventually starts to sympathize with Melibok's point of view, basically being like, hey, listen, like, you're one of us, you're one of the resistors, like, I can't, how can we kick you out of your home and you know, and traumatize you by ripping you out of this situation? Anyway, one thing leads to another. He gets shot at one point. Kira feels really bad. She's nursing him back to health. Sisko shows up and says, what the fuck are you doing? you're going to get fired. Make it right. You have like a day. Goodbye. And then Kira's like, yeah, okay. So they have like one like nice day together. He finishes building his kiln, which like, if you see what they're doing, like should have only taken 20 minutes, but somehow it takes like two goddamn days. I'm over it. It really bothered my wife when she was watching. She's like, that would not take a day. Sorry, I lost the thread. I apologize. Anyway, yeah. So anyway, but after they have a nice time, Kira's like, no, we're going and I'm taking you with me. And she burns his house to the goddamn ground and force teleports him off the planet. The B plot while this is going on is Jake and Nog find out that, you know, Quark is in possession of a large amount of useless Cardassian Yamek sauce. Jake and Nog, well, Nog gets into his head to be enterprising and to try to sell the Yamek sauce to a third party. Quark is just too frustrated and kind of gives it up. Says, yeah, throw it away, Nog, like, get rid of it, I don't care. So Nog sells it for some self-sealing stem bolts, which are God knows what those are. And it's really funny because they have a scene where O'Brien comes in and he's like, hey, O'Brien, what are these? And I'm like, I don't know.
I really enjoyed that.
I thought he would know. Nope. But anyway, eventually they sell the self-sealing stem bolts for a piece of land, which is inconceivable. And then not only that, but to find out that this is a piece of land that's due to be expropriated at a generous amount by the Bajoran government.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's they have an amazing version of that game where you're supposed to like trade a penny up to something better that you're all supposed to do in high school. Anyway, but it really works for them because they make huge money.
I guess I don't know, like, is 4-5 bars of gold pressed latinum a huge amount of money?
Well, that's what they sell the land to Quark for. I assume it would be,
I guess,
a lot of money. No one has it. I mean, the thing that's absurd about this is they're walking around this spaceport and no one has money. So I'm like, I don't have any money, but I'll trade you.
Well, I mean, it's they weren't on like the trading floor of the, you know, Federation Stock Exchange or something. They were out at docks where goods are moved, not money. Come on.
Sure. Yeah. So anyway, so they're out there. Nox cutting his Ferengi pointy teeth.
Yeah.
On business. But Nog, can we just talk about, multiple people get hosed here. Not the least of which are the guys who give the land. Like, clearly whoever gave this land to these kids knew that there was this, like this windfall cash money coming in for it. And just to then hand that away, like, how dumb do you have to be? And then I assume Nog selling it to Quark is, like, a vast undersell also.
I think so, yeah.
Nog is aspiring for pocket money. You know, not...
Well, this is what confuses me. Like, why I never quite understand the value of Gold Press Latinum, because it's like... He's a young kid who just wants, you know, to be able to buy those weird shaped lollipops that they sell on the promenade. And so, like, I don't know how much a gold pressed latinum is, but nobody has it, and everyone is like, "Wow, that's a lot of money! Like, holy moly!" But then Quark is just like, "Yeah, no problem, it's done." How much is this? And what are you kids buying with it?
Well, yeah,
are you putting it in education funds?
We talked about this in the gold episode where we talked about Game of Thrones and stuff, and but like how, like, you know, this is what makes gold troublesome as a currency, is that actually, like, you don't, like, it's almost too valuable to spend. You know, it's like, as you kind of like walking around and then, like, you know, what do you like, you have a $500 gold coin, you know, people aren't going to break that for you, you know?
No.
And
no.
If they do, what are they going to break it for? What are they going to give you back? Like, smaller denominations of gold? Like, it kind of puts you in a bind. Like, but there has to be a Bajoran currency. Like, they have to convert it to regional currency. Like, I don't understand why this transaction happened in regional currency. Or whatever.
It makes no sense.
The Yamaxos adventure is a fun, if not very frustrating, little tale. That adds some levity to what's a pretty heavy episode in the main.
Yeah, it is. It is a really heavy episode. Okay, let's discuss the B plot because we're talking about it right now. So, I mean, I thought it was interesting that one, Quark got a bunch of Yamaxos and was willing to just throw it out. Right, like, it's a very not Ferengi attitude, because normally he's like, there's profit to be found everywhere. Under every stone, there is profit. And now he has, like, you know, untouched Yamaxos that he's not even willing to, like, try and resell, even at a loss, you know, just to recoup some of his costs, right?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing that boggled my mind here, I guess. And again, don't put numbers in your episode, but Quark says he's going to take half of Rom's wages for 6 years to recover this shipment of Yamaxos. So how little is Rom getting paid? Or how expensive is Yamaxos? And if there's only doing this for 1,000 self-sealing stem bolts, did they get hosed? Like,
well, yeah, like are self-sealing stem bolts so valuable? I guess they do self-seal. I don't know.
I mean, that saves you like half the time.
So. That's like 2,000 bolts. Yeah, no, I mean, like the entire, it would be very, very interesting to start to do some like price analysis on these goods of like, okay, well, you can get whatever amount of Yamaxos for this number of stem bolts, and that's worth this much in gold pressed latinum. And that's worth this much in somebody's salary. How much these things are. So, yeah, it would be a really fun exercise just to keep track of all the prices that they mention.
Yeah.
And then work backwards.
And try to, because we know 5,000 wrappages of Yamaxos is 3 years' salary.
Yeah.
This is something we know about the Star Trek universe now.
At least 3 years of Rom's salary, so.
Now, we will add that Nog at one point when trying to sell the Yamaxos says, you know, real Yamaxos, not replicated.
Yes. Yeah.
So this implies that, like, you know, like that there's a premium good then.
Right. Yes. And they have mentioned this before, that like stuff that's replicated is never as good as food that is, you know, made.
Okay.
So that's fair. So I can understand that, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to think of like how much ketchup I could buy for 3 years' salary. even if it was premium handmade ketchup, I would get a lot of ketchup.
Yeah. Yeah. And once you start buying at volume, then also other efficiencies come into play, right?
Well, that's true as well.
Like, because you would begin, like, I mean, like, you wouldn't be paying REIT. So if you were going out and buying 3 years salary worth of ketchup, you would all of a sudden then gain all these additional efficiencies. But unless maybe the 3 year salary does include the retail profit,
maybe,
like, it wasn't just covering the cost. He was like, this is also then what the retail profit on it has to be as well.
Yeah.
From retailing it. I don't know.
But either way, like, Rom is basically making like what, like one and two thirds bars of latinum in a year? Gold pressed latinum?
Yeah, yes. This is what we've learned.
So every time we see people throwing around like a bar of gold pressed latinum, you know that that's like half a year salary for a serving position. Which I'm guessing is like a minimum wage job, but still, like, that's.
Yeah. It's never clear Rom's status. Is he like, is he Quark's number two, or is he just like, he's like an extremely abused low level employee?
An extremely abused low level employee.
Unambiguous. Okay. All right. Yeah, do you have any more to say about Yamek sauce wrappages?
No. Well, other than just sort of like the easy way that they trade these things, and also sort of like the amount of information that flows and doesn't flow about the goods, right? Because like they bought the self-sealing stem bolts, and then like on the manifest it says that it still belongs to some other person, and they're able to get like his name, his phone number, and his address from the manifest that anybody could just go up and read, which is like a little bit weird to have that kind of personal information just like freely available on the side of a box that's being transported through space.
Well, this becomes the question, like, was this a merchant, or was this the Amazon truck? Did a mail share service guy sell you a box that, like, for someone else, and then you're gonna go and proceed to like try to extort, sell it to that person?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's totally extortion.
And then the notion that also, like, you're dealing with ports and storage, and you have overages and surcharges, like there would be fees and levies and duties, and for them encountering any one of these as a no cash, no liquidity business,
for sure,
the only asset they not no J Enterprises has is 5,000 wrappages of Yamek sauce.
Yeah,
they have no cap, they have no other capital. So anytime they encountered any levy or surcharge, it would immediately halt their operation.
Yeah, and I'm like fairly certain that the Bajorans would be charging, particularly like on a Cardassian good like that, some sort of export fee or import fee or like one or both.
Yeah, right? Because they would totally have some sort of economic warfare thing going with Cardassia. Yeah,
for sure.
Like, you want to get on a list? Like,
so it's like, okay, well, they didn't import the Yamek sauce. Somebody else imported the Yamek sauce, fine. But they exported it. So, like, somebody's going to be, like, you're doing business with Cardassians? And then, like, the self-stealing symbols, nobody records the sale of them outside of, like, the two people who did the sale. You're like, whoa. That's not possible. Like, there's
maybe DS9 is a duty-free port.
Oh gosh. Well, this is actually the Federation, and since we don't have money, you can't charge duties here. You can, as soon as it leaves here, the Bajorans are probably going to charge you, but as long as it's on the port, it's fine. Yeah, maybe.
How do they move them? Like, anyway.
Yeah.
It was
one of those things where it was just like, this society would get an A from like the Fraser Institute for like ease of business processes, right? Because it's like,
yeah, this is
there are none.
Heritage Foundation, like, very nice.
You talk to a person who wants to buy something, they buy it, you sell it, the trade is done, the government doesn't need to know, nobody needs to know, like, there is no friction in this commerce whatsoever, which was very impressive in a way. Disheartening also. I'm just going to hazard a guess here. The Bajoran government would be in a better fiscal position if they took advantage of their borders and charged people for these sorts of interactions. And then they might not be in the position that they have to completely destroy an entire planet to heat a few homes.
To heat 100,000 homes specifically.
yeah. Anyway, so it was a fun storyline that I was just like, oh my gosh, this says so much about how business is done. Wow. I liked it.
Both of these stories, ultimately, the A plot and the B plot, are both about expropriation.
Yes.
Ultimately.
Yep.
Because the payoff that Quark gets at the end is receiving money from an expropriation.
Yep. And this is what I thought was super interesting as well, is that the government on Bajor was willing to pay people for the land, but when it came to the fifth moon, they just evacuated them.
Yeah. I mean, there was only 50 people living there. Apparently no one was supposed to be living there to begin with.
Who decided that?
Well, fair enough.
Who decided nobody should be allowed to live there?
I'm not going to defend this policy.
Yeah, no, but this, okay. So I, with this story of like Kira going down and like forcing these people off the moon, the planet,
sure.
Jurado, I'm sort of like two minds and maybe three minds of this that I'm like back and forth on it. Like the more I think about it, I'm like, do I agree with Kira or do I like with the government or do I not? And so like on the Spock principle, the goods of the many outweigh the goods of the few or the one. I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm with the government of Bajor, right? Because there's like 50 people on this planet, whatever, no big deal. Boot them off, heat the homes. Like you gotta keep these people warm through the winter. Why you don't have enough power on your own planet to do that is neither here nor there right now. It's just like, if that's the best, most expedient way and like you need to make this happen so people don't die, fine. Great. I'm all for it. But then I was like, okay, but also like these people live there. And I'm not going to say like it's their property or something. Like property rights trump this or anything, because I'm not gonna say that, but there is something I think about who owns that moon of Bajor, right? Just because it's a satellite of a planet, does that mean that planet automatically is given all decision making authority about that satellite? Because there are people who have made their home there completely unmolested. And in fact, they made their home there like to escape an oppressive power. So it's sort of like if you live in a spot and it's your planet, I kind of feel like Bajor now is like colonizing its own moon the same way that the Cardassians were colonizing Bajor. Just going in and like ripping out resources, right?
Sisko literally says that when he comes down to give her the straighten up talk. And he says, you're on the other side now. Like just point blank. Like,
right. He's like, you are the oppressor now.
Yeah.
and in that way, I'm sort of like, well, I'm siding with like the underdogs who this is their home. It has been their home for longer than Bajor had control over it. Like we should probably let them keep it.
I will say one thing was happening at this time. And this is the very early beginning of the Three Gorges Dam expropriation process.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
In China.
Hmm.
So the Three Gorges Dam, obviously being the largest hydroelectrical project in the world, flooded a lot of very, very densely populated land. So it was a project that displaced millions of people, tens of millions of people, I think. And of course, you know, as part of the whole, there was a huge outcry against it.
Mm.
How
mm-hmm.
could China do this? It's so authoritarian, so cruel, tens of millions of people be displaced. You know, I think one of the things is though, you know, I mean, no sensitivity to how China was displacing those people.
Sure.
Yeah. Not that I can speak to that with any, you know, I don't know what their compensation, what their expropriation process was like, but to, you know, to transfer tens of millions of people. I mean, that's the kind of thing you could see them doing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, your town was here, and now your town is four kilometers down the road over here.
Yeah, we rebuilt the homes, town though. For it's you. Fine.
It took us 15 days.
And I don't know what sort of compensation Mullebach was getting either. So, like, it might have been very handsome of, like, hey, we need you to leave. So this also raises the question around, like, government and democracy, right? I don't know, like, whose constituents are these people on the moon, right? What input did they have on the decision-making process to destroy the moon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the last sort of thing that I was like, maybe I'm on Mullebach's side, is also, like, this entire idea, and it sort of seemed like a justification for it as well, of, like, yeah, there's this moon capable of sustaining life, has a seemingly complex ecosystem, an atmosphere and flora and fauna, and it's okay for us to entirely rip that away.
Yeah, poison that forever.
Because we need a little bit of energy out of that thing.
100,000 homes, Marshall.
100,000 homes. And it makes me think of, like, well, basically any resource extraction here on our planet, right? You can think of, like, strip mining in the north for oil sands. You can look at, like, gold mining throughout.
In the further north?
Well, in the further north, but I was thinking more like in Africa, where we just go in and we pour acid into huge holes in the ground, completely ruining watersheds and poisoning
people. They do that in the Northwest Territories.
Maybe. I don't think to the same extent.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, I think we're probably... I mean, Canada has some real bad mining cartels.
We do, yeah. Like, we perfect the techniques at home.
And Belgian Congo
export
level.
Export them in very, very big ways to other countries where they don't have any sort of environmental protection or humanitarian protection. So,
if the RCMP are listening, we love the mining. Everyone loves the mining. No one's saying anything bad about mining, okay?
I'm saying a lot of bad things about mining. And if you want to point a sniper rifle at me, that's fine. I'll take it.
All right. So, this was exactly my thing. This was my whole thing. It's like, and it's all confounded by the fact that, like, again, dumb throwaway line. Oh, and if we just waited 6 months, we could have done this without...
With no problem whatsoever.
if we had just like taken a little more time, we could have like teleported the coil into the magma and then just had like a wireless relay sense system built up and then not kill the entire moon. Yeah. Just wait six. It just takes 6 months, guys.
6 months. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, good. But they don't have that kind of time.
Yeah. No. Goodness gracious. I don't know. Like, at that point, wouldn't you just be able to, like, move those 100,000 people temporarily just for the winter, snowbird them somewhere? We're like, okay, you're going to Florida for 3 months, and then we'll send you back home again when the winter is over. Next time winter comes around, we'll have enough power. You won't have to do that anymore. I was like, I think I'm actually on Mullebach's side, but not because it's like it's his property or because the Bajorans are being, like, overbearing. I think it's more because the Bajorans are being short-sighted.
Yeah.
And because the Bajorans, I don't know that they actually have any right to that moon. Right? Other than
it's
the right
of arms. It's
a crime
against the ecology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it does not factor in to the narrative at all.
No. No one is like, you know, that's an entire ecosystem. They're just like, well, yeah, of course you're going to do this. Why wouldn't you?
That's one whole Gaia.
Yeah.
It's not just an ecosystem. That is one spaceship planet you're killing.
Yeah. Anyway, I did.
So
think
how,
it was...
how far we've come, I guess.
So I'm totally on Mullebach's side. No one should have kicked him off that moon because he was, you know, a better caretaker for it than the new owners are.
Even if he couldn't build a goddamn kiln to save
his life. He got it built. Damn it. The other thing that I think is really interesting about this is to see Kira's evolution, her understanding of like her role and her place in the world.
Yeah.
Where she's like, I always fight for the underdogs and I'm always supporting Bajorans. And now she's like, she got two different Bajorans to support. And both of them are sort of underdogs in some ways, right? Like those 100,000 homes need heat. And this Mullabok, you know, doesn't deserve to have his home taken from him. But then she buckles down and is like, no, I am an agent of the state. And I have a monopoly on violence and I will exercise that monopoly.
Aaron Sorkin's adults are in the room and they right. decided 100,000 homes need heat and it doesn't matter who gets stepped on or right. along the way. Republicans and Democrats achieved a consensus, Marshall. That's how you make a good decision.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's pretty torn up about it, but she's like, no, this is my job. I don't know. Like maybe there's a promotion on the line, something like that, where she's like, no, I have to do this because I might get fired. And she really like settles into her role of do what it takes to keep the Bajoran state alive.
Yeah.
No matter what. Even if it sort of is like sacrificing some of her ideals.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I think, just an incredibly rare moment of honesty for the show.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're the, like we're in the power game. We're playing it too. You know, we're not better than anyone else.
No, not at all.
And with the only caveat that's like, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it kinder. I'll be a kinder, gentler machine gun hand.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
Which I think is supposed to make the viewer feel better. But I took it to be much more melancholic, like that was for her. That was so she could live with herself.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No.
It wasn't an accommodation to him.
No. Like Mullabok says to her, if I leave this planet, I will die.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I won't let you. And I was like, that's not your choice to make, Kira. Like, you don't get to come in and be like, you live because I told you you'll live. Damn it. No.
I mean, der Staat ist Gott. The state is God.
Yes.
As Hegel would say.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's interesting that Kira was willing to kill an innocent man for the state.
Yeah.
So it's like she has become more complex as a result of this, right? It's not, yeah. She's not just killing Cardassians anymore. She's also killing Bajorans.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
And then it's not necessarily about what's right. It's about what succeeds.
Yeah.
What achieves your immediate short term, what is expedient to your immediate political needs, is far greater than what is right or important or ecologically necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, so you have all, this is the Federation that was like, I don't know, crystal entity. I don't know if we can hurt it.
Right.
Yeah, just fucking kill that moon. That's fine. We'll help you. You want to put a big hole in it? Cool. O'Brien, can you put a big hole in a moon? Awesome.
Sure can.
I'll just put it back together with self-sealing spools later. I totally know what those are.
No, I think O'Brien was actually probably the guy who was like, if you wait 6 months, I can do it without a hole. I'm like, nah,
no one
forget
wants to
that.
Hear from you Irish bastard. Get out of here.
Do what you say. You're just enlisted.
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. So, I don't know. Do you have anything else to say about this episode?
No, I mean, I liked it. It was nicely complex and develops Kira's story effectively. So, yeah. It's good.
Mm-hmm. And we found the anti-Chinese sentiment buried deep within it. So
you sure did.
Yeah, that's I'm really looking for these. I'm really like, how is this about China? And I can always find something. So yes. Yeah, all right, this is exciting.
I mean, I don't know if Peter Allen Fields knew that he was writing about China, but
he know.
This is great. So that
you know, I mean, it's in the newspaper, right? Like if you were like, if you like, you know, it's in the media reports, like it's people are hearing about these things.
No, absolutely. But I mean, it could have also just been about like I said, resource extraction.
Yeah.
Anywhere around the globe. Right. Mm-hmm. Like this is not limited. China is not the only country that is, you know, displacing people or harming people, for either energy or other, you know, natural goods. Just about every country is guilty of that. So, so this was episode 14, Progress. I give it 4 self-sealing stem bolts out of 5.
I will give it 4.5 self-sealing stem bolts.
Wow.
Out of 5.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's good.
It doesn't quite cinch the coveted last half of that self-sealing stem bolt, though. Yeah.
You can find our show on Twitter at AssetDroid. You can find us on the internet at androidsandassets.ca. I'm Marshall, and I'm on Twitter at EconoBoyd, or you can email me at Marshall, MARSHALL, at androidsandassets.ca.
And hi. Yes, I'm Steven, and you can find me on Twitter at SteveDroids. That's plural. And you can email me at steve at androidsandassets.ca. I would love to hear from you, and I would love to hear why I am wrong. Please send me your criticisms, especially that one guy who does that all the time, who texts me. Try sending me an email. I love you, Spencer. Thank you.
The next time you are out expropriating land from somebody for natural resources, why don't you try turning this episode on for them and share the love that is Androids and Assets. We're always looking for new listeners.